It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goth.
Morena, Phil. How are you?
Morena, Rachel. I'm very good, and happy Matariki to you today.
Yes, and to you too.
We're formally celebrating it today, although I was up at 4:30 on Saturday morning, my birthday as it happened to be.
Oh, happy birthday.
to go to the function at Pukekaua.
Lovely.
With Waikato Tainui, who are the iwi manaaki, the host iwi this year. But it was a great morning. We had the Māori King there, and you know, I think it's great that we bring back some of the things that have been lost through time, and Māori New Year is one of those, and it's just a chance for us to do what we normally do at a new year. We look back and think of the year that's passed, look forward to plans for the future, but it's a good way of, I think, integrating our wider community with the Māori community and celebrating something about our Indigenous culture as well. So, it was a good event, and of course we've been planting trees, tens of thousands of trees, to celebrate Matariki,
yes.
All native trees.
Yeah. I'm excited for a night that's a little bit clearer to try and see the constellation as well. It's not been very clear the last few nights. I've had a look. We had the free fares on buses and public transport day on Sunday. How did that go, Phil?
It went really great. I went into town and went down to the Britomart and talked to a whole lot of families down there, and there were a lot of families. And, you know, the common feedback I was getting, look, our kids had never been on a train before, or, you know, we hadn't been on the ferry. And people really enjoyed it. We had four times as many people travelling on the train as we would normally have. The ferry company had to put on extra ferries to get people across to Devonport in particular. And a lot of families, too, said, oh, look, it was great. We went on the double-decker bus, you know. And, boy, you can see a whole lot of Auckland from that double-decker bus.
I've enjoyed since the double-decker buses have been brought in. You do see Auckland in a very different way when you're riding around on those.
You see the tops of things. you get that elevation. And I kind of was a bit surprising when it came in, because we always associated, you know, double-decker, you had the London buses and that sort of thing. But, gosh, would we ever have them here? And, of course, we've got them here, and we filled up the single-storey buses. Now we're filling up the double-storey buses, and the next step's got to be light rail. So
I'm
giving every encouragement to government. Let's get started on this light rail.
Absolutely.
Because that's one way that we can start to decongest our streets.
Absolutely. But, Do you think that this might mean that we get some more free fees days coming up in the future?
I hope so. I mean, what were we trying to do with it? First of all, just to say a big thank you to Aucklanders for the 100 million passenger trips a year. That's a huge increase in the use of public transport. But also to introduce people that had never travelled on public transport to the concept of, hey, this isn't scary, you know. You might be used to just hopping in the car and going into work, but think about what the alternative options are. Because if you get out of your car and onto the train or onto the bus or onto the ferry, you know, that's one less car clogging up the motorway. And I think it had that effect. And, of course, from the 1st of September, we're bringing in our free public transport on the weekends for our 15-year-olds and under. So that means that if mum and dad want to take the kids out somewhere, they're saving money on the kids' fares. They're paying the fares themselves.
Well, it gives teenagers a bit of autonomy as well, which
it gives them a chance to get around and use public transport. And I guess part of what we're doing is saying, look, you know, for future generations, public transport's going to become more the norm than it is today. And let's start introducing our younger people to using public transport, to see how convenient it is and how comfortable it is and how accessible it is. And I think it's had that impact. So,
well, that's great.
Hopefully we can do it again.
Fantastic. Well, let's talk about pests now in different news. Out in Titirangi, the pest control problem that's going on there at the moment with rats the size of cats, as people are saying, which I feel like is turning into a David Bowie song there. But how is the council tackling this problem? Because it is a bit of a big one, especially when it's so visible, people are able to see them. That's not really great. It means that it's obviously, if you can see a rat, there's, you know, many more that you can't see as well. What's actually happening to deal with the pests there?
Yeah, well, we have a kind of a primeval reaction to rats. I mean, I do too. You know, can't stand the things. They may be part of the ecosystem, but you associate it with, you know, bad things like the plague. I live in the countryside, so I am continually poisoning and trapping rats, so it's just par for the course for me. But I think when you're in the city and you see a big rat, you may not be so used to that, and you think, gosh, what's happening? We have had, you know, obviously an increase in the rat population around Titirangi, and what we're doing is a whole lot of things, actually. We're running online campaigns through council, encouraging people to act by setting traps, keeping their gardens clear, and we've received nearly 750,000 hits on our website for more information about how to control and eradicate pests. But we're also working with a whole lot of groups. I looked up the statistics, actually, and it's quite astounding. There are 1,700 community groups across Auckland actively working to reduce pests through, you know, trapping, baiting, and other actions. And we're supporting them with advice, with traps, with bait stations and more. And we're doing that out of the targeted rate to, you know, on the environment, which Auckland has voted in favour of. And, you know, I think we'll start to have a bit of an impact. We've got contractors working in Titirangi. Mm-hmm. In fact, they start today at the Titirangi War Memorial Reserve. And they're setting bait stations, and they'll be doing similar things on the Rangiwai Reserve and on the area between Rangiwai and Titirangi Roads. And we've got those contractors also working with the community groups.
So you'd be encouraging people to, I guess, go on the website and find out more information about how they can be doing stuff as well, or would you be encouraging people to just sort of leave it up to the professionals, so to speak?
Oh, no, look, I think, you know, people play a role in that, and if you've got a house, you know, and obviously in Titirangi you're in the bush there, so you know, when you have a mast year like we've had and there's a lot more tree seeds around, there are a lot more rats around, I'd encourage people to take their own action. It's not hard. We've got those little plastic rat traps that you put the poison into. It's a blue-coloured rodent bait, and, you know, that keeps... This time of the year, rats, the food sources are more scarce, so they come in closer to the houses, and secondly, they come into your houses for the warmth. So, you know, mm-hmm. We've been finding that for years, and the damn things find their way in, even though you think you've blocked every entrance and place they can get to.
Yes.
Nobody wants rats in their home.
No, nobody, and nobody wants rats in their native bush as well.
No,
exactly.
No.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're doing that. Obviously, out in the big areas like Hunua, when we did the poison drop, we wiped out. We were catching 75 rats per 100 traps. Now, straight after the poison drop, we catch none. They will find their way back into the area, but that's been fantastic for kokako and other native bird life, because the rats are enormous predators on our birds' eggs and our young chicks. So if we want our native birds back, we've got to take those sort of actions against the rats.
So there is a bit of hope in it. There is a bit of hope in it.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a communal effort, I think, there.
A communal effort. Everybody pitching in. That's the way we get things done.
Let's talk a little bit about the crackdown on taverns with pokies. So this is something that the Auckland Council has done. Could you explain a little bit about what this is, what the council's doing, I guess, to crack down on pokies as gambling shops? I'm saying that in you know, inverted commas here. That's what it's been referred to. What is the council actually doing, and what does it mean?
Well, we've only got limited powers in this area. Largely, it's the Department of Internal Affairs that license them. But what we do is that where we find that establishments that are meant to be there for supplying drink and refreshments are actually making most of their money out of pokies, then we will investigate that further, because that's not consistent with their licences. Now, let me express my personal prejudice. You know, have I ever played the pokies? Oh, once or twice. It's not my thing, really. But what really used to make me sad is the local... from where my electorate office used to be when I was in Mount Roskill, you know, you'd wander down there and you'd see these people, this line of people on the machines that were there for hours, and they were often people that probably didn't have a hell of a lot of money, and maybe that's why they were gambling. You know, there was the hope that you can make money, but actually they were spending, you know, money that probably they could ill afford to spend. And I always found that quite sad. It was kind of like a form of addiction. So I'm in favour of our broad council policy of a sinking lid, that when somebody relinquishes the licence, and we've got to leave it a period of time for people not to reapply, but then we will not re-establish that licence if within 6 months there's been no applications. And I'd kind of like to see that. You know, I know that in some of our bowling clubs and things like that, people are using it much more responsibly. Probably in the big establishments like Sky City, you've got a bit more supervision. But you do see some dreadful sights around some of the pubs where people kind of you feel that they're people almost without much hope in their life, and the gambling is a way that they can maybe achieve things that they wish to achieve but can't afford. And that's kind of a sad reflection on our community in many ways.
All right. So basically what I'm understanding is, because I didn't quite understand this policy as well, so if someone's license runs out and then if they don't get someone apply to get that license again within a certain period, then the license isn't renewed.
Within 6 months, we can just simply say, okay, the sinking lid policy applies, and that license won't be reallocated to anybody.
Got you. Okay. Yeah.
But as I say, the only thing really that is our role is if we find, and there have been one or two cases of it that were reported in the paper. If you're running an establishment that's largely about making money out of pokies rather than providing drinks and refreshments, then we can investigate, and that will be contrary to the license. So you can't set these mm-hmm. things up just to make money out of them yep. as your primary form of income.
That seems fair enough. That might be all we've got time for this morning. We might have to say fireworks till next week, Phil. But thank you very much for chatting to us.
Okay, Tess, always good. Rachel.
Tess is also here.
Tess.
She's laughing.
Yeah.
So.
And fireworks can wait. Yeah, that's an ongoing thing. And in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be discussing that at the Local Government New Zealand Conference.
But, all right.
More than happy to talk about that next week.
Cool. Thank you very much, okay. Phil. We'll speak
Cheers.
To you soon. Bye.
Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.